The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Please be seated. Good morning. Our first case for today is 2015-1672, In Re Nuvasiv. Mr. Rosato, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I had reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the Court, as Your Honor noted, this is an appeal from two inter-parties reviews, the 2013 507 508, both involving Nuvasiv's patent number 8187334, directed to lateral spinal fusion implants. Respectfully, the Board's finding of unpatentability should be reversed because the decision, both decisions in both of the IPRs, erred by crafting and relying on new grounds of unpatentability in its final written decisions while explicitly refusing to give Nuvasiv an opportunity to respond.
Well, is it really a new ground of unpatentability? It's figure 18, correct? Is that
correct.
What we're talking about? Of the same reference that was the ground of patentability that was being considered. At all times, it was obviousness of these particular references in combination. So why is it a new ground of patentability?
It's a new ground because the theory of unpatentability and the thrust of the invention had completely changed. It changed from one theory and a particular embodiment to a completely different embodiment that, quite frankly, addresses or presents a type of implant that is fundamentally different, not only from the embodiment of the Michelson disclosure that was originally relied upon, but every other single implant that was addressed or presented in any of the references.
Yeah, you're the one who, in your response before PTAB, included Michelson 16, 19, and 20. And 16 and 19 are on the same page, and in between them is 18. But you didn't include 18. Why not? That says something to me.
Well, okay, well, I'm interested to hear what that says. My explanation of that would be figure 18 and figure 19 are describing the same embodiment. Figure 18 shows one piece of a multi-piece assembly implant. So the point that was being made in the response, and it's a valid and unrebutted point, Your Honor, is that all of the implants in Michelson are designed to be oversized both in length and width. And that was the point.
What it says to me, it says when you exclude something from the body of a document and it turns out that information is relevant, then it tells me that if I were at a trial level anywhere, mm-hmm. I would immediately say to myself, gee, what's in that hole?
It's a fair question to want to know what's there. I don't think there was any intent to skip over things. The point that was being made.
Well, of course there was. You left it out. It was left out. I mean.
I respectfully would submit the intent was not to hide anything,
oh, well.
Your Honor. The point being made, and if you read the briefing on that point, was. Taking the petitions.
You can take it. We read the briefing.
I feel very sure that that is the case. But the argument that was being made was in response to what was presented in the petition. The petition case was resize the primary implants according to the dimensions of the Michelson implant. And there was one implant cited in the petition. So taking that suggestion to its logical conclusion was the argument.
And why wasn't Hines asked about 18? Because you were permitted below to cross-examine him and file motions for observation and so on.
So this gets to the issue of whether observations on cross-examination after reply constitute an opportunity to respond. And they don't.
It's some opportunity. It just may not be enough opportunity.
True. Yeah,
you can't put in your own evidence.
Exactly.
All right, so can I just focus on this? In one of the two Medtronic petitions, there is a reference to, what is it, column 10, which of Michelson, which contains the descriptions of 18 and 19. And let's just assume for these purposes that 18 and 19 teach the same thing in terms of a long and wide and a narrow implant, each one of them all by itself. Why was, just as to that, which is that the 507? That's the 507 IPR.
Number, I think it's the 507,
right?
Yeah.
Which includes all the claims except for 16 and 17. Why is that not sufficient notice for you to have understood that you should address what was in column 10 of Michelson, which indeed you did, and in fact you did it not only in 507 but in 508, where there was no such counterpart in Medtronic's petition. So where is the missing opportunity to be heard? Because maybe your patent owner's response was that opportunity without more.
It was an opportunity, but again, this goes back to the original theory presented, which was focused very specifically. If you look at the claim charts that are actually presented and how Medtronic maps that the relevant elements of the claim to the disclosure of Michelson, they are relying only on column 10, lines 41 through 46, which is a discussion of the figure 16 implant.
What I'm recalling, and tell me if I'm wrong, was that in Medtronic's 507 petition, there was first of all the long primary argument about, is it Frey or Fry?
Fry. Yeah.
Fry, okay. Yeah, Fry. And then there's an argument that says, well, okay, if put aside Fry by itself, we now have Fry plus other stuff, including Fry plus Michelson. And then there's a discussion of Michelson saying, as to these elements of your claim, A through G and something else, but I think G is the crucial one, right? G is the one that has the ratio of length greater than or equal to 2.5 times width, right? And it's in that discussion that Medtronic said, see column 10 of Michelson, and it shows longer than wider, and there's no other claim element that could have been applied to, could have made any sense, except the 2.5 one. So why wasn't that sufficient?
Yeah, so two points. So the Fry alone theory was completely rejected at institution. So again, there's two parts of the petition. And as an initial matter, I would note that Medtronic has not advanced this argument. They never asserted that reference you're referring to, Your Honor, constituted notice, or that they in fact did ever rely on this modular implant embodiment.
I just want to clarify one thing factually, because I'm not positive I understand the facts exactly right in light of the discussion you're having with Judge Toronto. Factually, I thought Medtronic only relied on Michelson, column 10, roughly 41 to 46, for purposes of length greater than 40 millimeters. I didn't remember them relying on Michelson to prove the 2.5 to 1 ratio. Am I misremembering? I very well may be misremembering the facts, so I want you to make it very clear.
Yes. If you look at the claim chart, when it's the 40 millimeter length, they specifically cite to just what Your Honor identified, column 10, lines 41 through 46. For the 2.5 to 1, I don't know that they specifically map that up, but that's critically tied to the same thing.
So what I'm looking at is, yeah. So A172, which is, I think, their petition in 507, and it's under the heading D, ground 4, claims 1 through 5, et cetera, are obvious over section 103 over Fry in view of Michelson. And it says, with respect to elements A through D, F through J, and then you go on to 172 and about, I don't know, two-thirds of the way down. Like Fry, Michelson discloses example lateral fusion implants having an elongated shape, dimensions that are longer than wide and wider than tall with a large internal space. See Michelson, basically all of column 10.
All of column 10,
okay,
yeah.
So that includes that, and item element G is the 2.5.
Right.
That's not limited to the particular five lines that you were citing before.
Sure.
That's what I was focusing on.
Understood, and I do want to address that point because it's an important one. So just to clarify how this is read, I think the paragraph referencing, these are set up to introduce the section as petitioner are going to do an element by element showing, and we're going to talk about rationale. So that I wouldn't tie together those two paragraphs as conflated into an element by element showing. I guess it's one point of distinction. But the paragraph you're referring to, Judge Toronto, is discussion of rationale to combine. If you look at what they're arguing there, they're essentially saying these two references are both directed to spinal fusion implants. They're analogous art. And that paragraph concludes on A174. This is all one huge paragraph. It concludes, thus the combinations made from these are merely simple combinations. So this is in the context of rationale to combine. So I'd say it's not in the context of an element by element showing. And two, it's so general that they say to practically every embodiment in term to support the point that these are both references, Fry and Michelson, are directed to implants.
Can I ask this as a slight variation? Correct my premise if it's wrong. My understanding was that even in this, what Medtronic was saying was we can find the length width ratio in column 10 of Michelson, to stipulate that for purposes of this question. I know you kind of disagree with that. What the board ended up doing was saying we can find in Michelson both the 40 millimeter length and the length width ratio, which I think maybe is that different from this, and would that difference matter?
It's a very critical point you're picking up on, Your Honor. So what the board rejected, let's think about what the board rejected in terms of arriving at a combination. They rejected this buffet approach where you start with an implant and then look to another implant of Michelson and take one dimension but not all of the dimensions. That was the original theory presented in the petition, and the board rejected that. We know they rejected that because they specifically said in the context of Claim 18, which they upheld, that there's no rationale to pick one dimension from an implant. They ended up invalidating the claims they did because they felt that they could find the dimensions, the length, the width ratio, and the 40 millimeters all in the single module piece. That's how they came to this. They were unwilling to pick selectively dimensions from an implant. They were only willing, in the absence of a specific rationale to do otherwise, take an implant and Michelson and resize the primary reference accordingly.
I want to get a little bit of APA in here since we haven't touched it at all.
Yeah.
Take it as a given that if we affirm PTAB's decision in either IPR, then it's invalidated, it's obvious, and the other one goes. But you've also got APA arguments. Is there any reason we should treat 507 different than 508 under the APA analysis, or does it rise and fall the same way?
It's a fair question. So as far as notice and opportunity to respond, I would say for the reasons we argued in our briefing, there was no opportunity. Again, looking at the case, just to make this point clear, and I'll get more specific to yours, but just to make clear, this is a new theory, as we argued, that came up in reply. We asked multiple times for an opportunity to respond and didn't get that. And you can see that in the record.
What do you do with Genzyme?
With Genzyme, I would embrace Genzyme. Genzyme is a situation where it's very different. I would actually embrace Dell versus Acceleron more because the facts are more similar.
They come out differently, too.
They come out differently, but the facts explain why they come out differently. Dell, you had a situation where the very same reference was being utilized, and there was a pivoting between components of the reference to meet a claim limitation. That changed in the reply brief, that then further changed in oral hearing. Genzyme was different. That theory was the same starting from the beginning, that in vitro data was predictive of the in vivo success. It was a situation of yes, it is, no, it isn't, yes, it is, right? Yes, it is predictive. Institution decision, yes, it is. Reply, patent response, no, it isn't. Reply, yes, it is. So it's the same issue, the same thrust of the invention, just like similar to the Belden case as well. you've got the same issue that's being substantiated throughout the record. That's very different from starting with a particular theory and then recognizing a deficiency and turning to different content within the reference.
But I'd like to go back for a second to Judge Wallach's question, because your time is up and your rebuttal time is almost up on top of it. But let me ask one last question, which is, so there's a difference in the 507 and 508. In 507, as Judge Toronto pointed out on page 172, they actually reference Michelson and the particular section in the context of the ratio discussion, arguably. In 508, though, there is no reference to Michelson at all.
Yes.
So certainly 508 undoubtedly is a better case for you, right? I mean, because in 508, the petitioner never even referenced this portion of the reference. Does that matter? I think that's part of where Judge Wallach was in the beginning, and it's part of what I want to know from you, too, which means, does your best-case scenario matter, or is it irrelevant? Because if I conclude you did have an opportunity in 507 to respond, 508's irrelevant.
Yeah, well, I would say there's no way that that general citation in the front should count as notice.
Yes, but that's not what I've asked you. Try to focus on answering my question.
I know it's not. Assuming that it does, on that point, it would, if that's the pivotal point, it would matter between the two references. But it gets to a fundamental point.
It would matter between the two references.
I said references. I meant petitions.
Well, am I right? 508 is the only one that includes claims 16 and 17. 507 doesn't. Is that right?
Correct.
So there's actually two different claims that are unaccounted for in 507.
Correct. There would be overlap.
But what about notice? I mean, you filed exactly the same but on this point.
Mm-hmm.
Patent owner's response in your 507 and 508 patent owner's response, mm-hmm. even though you had less material to respond to in 508.
Yeah.
Doesn't that show you had the notice of the point in 508, or is that not a fair point?
I don't think it's notice, Your Honor. I think really what was being done is trying to characterize what is the state and invention of Michelson and point out that what the state of the art of lateral implants, if Michelson is presenting that, what that's teaching you is to make your implants as wide as possible to maximize coverage of the disc space. So the combination is ultimately going in a direction opposite of what the state of the art was recognized at the point. So it's really a rationale point that was being made. There's no reason to resize the primaries to make them long and narrow in view of Michelson. And the critical point, I really want to make sure I hit this before we conclude, is does this all matter? There is the process issue, but there also is, at the end of the day, a factual record that looks exactly what you'd expect it to look like when something comes up very late in the process, and that is an undeveloped and unexplained theory of non-obviousness, right? So there's no explanation in the final written decisions or in Medtronic's petitions or any of the materials or reply brief, why a person would resize the primary reference according to one piece of a modular implant.
Well, were these adoptions of arguments rather than evaluations of the record, which included Michelson 18?
Why were these adoptions? Excuse me?
Why were the PTAB's final written decisions adoptions of arguments?
Why were they adopting these
arguments? Yeah, rather that were not presented, because that's what you're saying, as opposed to they're saying they're evaluating the evidence, which is what they do.
Well, I don't know if they say they're... we don't know why. I mean, this is a problem as came up in the Veronata case as well. We don't know why they brought these together.
Can they be discerned?
There's nothing in the record, in the decisions, or in the reply materials, why a person of ordinary skill would look to one piece of a modular implant, a completely different type, and then resize a different type of implant according to a one piece of, right, of a different type of implant. There is no explanation.
Can I ask you one question?
Sure.
Just about, I guess, the 508. There, it wasn't Fry that was being relied on so much as what SVSPR and Telemann, if I got the name right. Both of those, I think I'm correct in saying the board did not find the following, but it's, tell me if I'm wrong in thinking that SVSPR and Telemann make it, you know, beyond dispute. Both of those show certain implants with a length-to-width ratio of greater than 2.5. They're not long, but they are much longer than what?
Yes, they do, right? But this still doesn't answer the rationale, right? If the board does what they did, which is a claim mapping exercise to identify elements between different types of implants, they can find that ratio in the SVS and Telemann. Where rationale comes in is SVS and Telemann are a completely different type of posteriorly inserted implant where those dimensions make sense for that purpose. You go to Michelson, it's a completely different type of lateral implant where Michelson is telling you, you no longer are coming in from the back, you no longer are working around a spinal cord and these other anatomical restrictions. Maximize the placement of the disc space and make this as wide as possible. So there's a rationale issue as to why a person would resize one type of implant to essentially turn it into a completely, that's even going too far to turn it into a different, it becomes a hybrid implant with no rationale as to why you would do that. And that's
okay, counsel, I think we're way beyond your time. So why don't you sit down and we'll hear from the PTO.
Yeah, I would ask...
No, counsel, sit down.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Your Honor, may it please the Court? The PTO originally intervened in this case in order to address certain procedural issues.
So, Mr. Mattel, Mr. Rosato embraces Genzyme, but even more dearly embraces Dell. And in your green brief, you argue that NuVasa was provided adequate APA procedural protections. Tell me how this case is distinguishable from Dell, and more importantly, between those two cases, where do we draw the line for adequate procedural protection safeguards under APA?
Your Honor, it's simply a case-by-case determination. Genzyme, the Court's latest statement on this, provides the relevant standard. The inquiry under both the APA and the due process clauses, did the party have adequate notice of the issues that would be considered, and did it have an opportunity to respond at a meaningful point in the proceeding? Now, we all agree that the period of the patent owner response is a meaningful opportunity to respond. So the relevant question is, did Medtronic's petition combined with the institution decision give NuVasive adequate notice?
Well, let's start on the 508 only, because that's your worst case. So let me start on
Your Honor, I believe 507 is the one that involved Fry and Michelson, and it's 508.
That's why I want you to start on 508, which is your worst case
for
providing notice.
Yes. Your Honor, there's an important point I'd like to raise with regard to 508. It goes to the merits. It's not something the PTO addressed because, again, we assume the parties would address the merits. But because Medtronic's not here, I'd like to point out in Section 2 of Medtronic's brief, they point out that in 508, the board entered an independent and separate finding that the claims were unpatentable based on the combination of SVSPR and Telemann as modified in view of Michelson. And as Medtronic notes in its brief, that combination is never addressed in NuVasive's briefing in that court. That combination affords an independent basis for invalidation of the challenged claims, and it's simply no reason has been presented for disturbing the board's findings in this case. I think the board's important enough that it's worth even taking a look at the board's written decision in 508. In that case, the board begins framing the issue at page 5 of its decision. This is at about page 21 of the record. And the board points out, petitioner is arguing in this case that you can take either SVSPR or Telemann, both of which disclose the long and narrow limitation, and it's saying, and this is the board again, it's saying, petitioner says you can modify this in view of Medtronic's suggestion of a longer implant. And it notes that Medtronic suggests this modification for purposes of stability and for, as the board puts it, as applied dimensional optimization in accordance with the prior art.
And when you say the board found this about SVSPR, what you're referring to is its quotation of what Medtronic argued in the petition, its own findings. Is that right?
This is where it framed the issue. The board's finding appears at about page 26 through 27 of the record. At page 24, it addresses NuVasive's argument. NuVasive argued, oh, you can't combine these, you can't lengthen SVSPR.
Where, you said 26 to 27.
26
to 27.
Tell me
right where.
Page 826 through 27 of the joint appendix. I think it would be about page 10 of the board decision, beginning towards the bottom of page 10. And the the board began addressing the two parties' arguments. Nuvase had argued that, no, you can't combine them because the SVS, PR, and Telemann are posteriorly inserted implants, and if you lengthen them too much, then they injure the anterior space of the disc. This argument is fleshed out in the patent owner's response. They argued that if you make this posterior implant too long, it'll injure the aorta and the vena cava of the great
vessels. Forgive me if I'm wrong, this is all about the 40 millimeters in length, right? But does this have anything at all to do with the ratio of 2.5 to 1? This discussion that you're pointing me to?
Yes, it's at this passage that the board finds that it weighs the two parties' arguments and concludes it agrees with the petitioner that you can modify both SVS, PR, and Telemann in accordance with Medtronic's suggestion of a longer length. First, it finds that it doesn't matter that SVS, PR, and Telemann are posteriorly inserted because the claims don't require that. It could be a lateral implant. And then the board, I think this is at the top of page 27, goes on to directly address this argument about posterior implants. And here the board cites the Tomei reference. Tomei is another posteriorly inserted implant, and the board concludes that in view of Tomei shows an embodiment that has a 45 millimeter length and that this rebuts the argument.
I guess I'm looking at these pages, but it's not jumping out at me where you started your discussion, which was with a claim that you agreed or you wanted to point me to Medtronic's argument that the board made a separate fact finding that SVS and Telemann, taken together with Michelson, resulted in obviousness separate and apart from the failure of Michelson alone to have disclosed all the elements. So where can you grab your appendix? Do you have it? You can borrow mine if you don't have it.
I have it right here, Your Honor.
But where precisely do you... language imprecise would be that finding that you're talking about?
It's the paragraph that begins at the bottom of page 10 of the board's decision. This is page 26 of the record, where actually just above that, the board begins by saying you can insert these implants laterally, and if you could do it laterally, then these arguments about posterior implants are irrelevant. And then it goes on to cite this Tomei patent and says, you know what, Nuvasiv's whole argument was that you can't make a posteriorly inserted implant longer than 40 millimeter, but the Tomei reference here discloses an implant that's longer than 40 millimeters. We believe that shows that you can make this combination, and therefore we agree with petitioner that you can modify the SVS, PR, and Telemann references in view of Medtronic's teaching of making a longer implant.
Let me see if I think I'm focusing on the same thing that Judge Moore is focusing on. That discussion seems to be about using Michelson for the 40 millimeter, not for length and width.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's back earlier on page 22 or 6 of the original number, where the board seems to, in its own finding, rely only on Michelson, the same passage we were discussing for the length-width ratio. We credit the testimony of Hines, blah, blah, blah. And the board does not appear to say for the length-width ratio, we find that, we credit the testimony or assertion by petitioner in STS and Telemann.
The board did import this alternative finding from the 507 IPR that, you know, look, Medtronic is saying that you can combine these. This is what's at page 5 of the decision where the petitioner's argument is framed, that you rely on each reference for one of the two structural limitations. The board goes on to say, it's all in Michelson anyway. We found that in the other IPR.
But that's all I see them saying. With regard to the length width, I don't read this opinion as ever attributing that finding to anything other than Michelson. And unlike the 507 IPR, where there is a specific reference in the petition to column 10 of Michelson, and even with regard in the petition to the length-width discussion, there's no similar reference in 508 anywhere to Michelson at column 10 for purposes of length-width or figure 18 or anything else. And that's the due process problem that you have. The due process problem, as argued by petitioner, is at its absolute peak and strongest with regard to this set of facts, which is why I'm not letting you bother with 507, because I know your arguments there and I understand them completely, but this is your harder case. Your agency relied, in my view, after reading this opinion, entirely on a section of Michelson, which was never cited in the petition and upon which the petition was not granted in reliance on. And that seems to be the whole rationale. So how did Nuvasiv have an opportunity to respond to the ultimate decision the board made here which in my view is only that Michelson discloses the length width, the 2.5 to 1, when that was never part of what the petition argued originally in this IPR. And if, you know, I mean, maybe your best argument is, well, they made it in 507, so we can rely on it in 508, but that's going to make me have conniptions if you make that argument, because, you know, I kind of don't think that you can say, well, we did it in this one case, so we can do it over here. But, you know, go ahead. Try your best to tell me why there isn't a due process problem.
Well, Your Honor, these two IPRs involve the same patent and mm-hmm. the same principal reference, the Michelson
reference. Okay, but wait, but you have lots and lots of IPRs that involve the same patent. Sometimes we'll have four cases on the same day, which are IPRs, sometimes brought entirely by different petitioners, all against the same patent, some for anticipation, some for obviousness, and if it's a CBM, heck, let's throw a 101 in there for good measure. So, you know, it's often the case that you have multiple cases raising allegations of invalidity against multiple against the same patent. That doesn't mean I'm going to import the arguments made by one petitioner in one case into arguments made by a different petitioner in a different case, right? Clearly, I wouldn't do that.
I agree it could be problematic in some cases. This case, though, just involved two IPRs with the same party, and it would be passing strange for the board to conclude in one IPR that Michelson discloses all of the disputed limits of the same patent and yet completely ignore that finding in the other IPR. The prior art teaches what it teaches.
But why? It's a finding, just like you said. It is a fact finding. And if certain facts were never, ever alleged in a given case, look, we get cases sometimes where on identical facts they end up coming out this different way, right? Because the standard of review, maybe I have to give deference to both set of facts. Or maybe one attorney was better in a given case and made an argument that allowed me to find in his favor in that case, and on the exact same set of facts, a lesser attorney didn't have the good sense to make the same argument and preserve it, so I can't make that finding. This is what judges are forced to do, right? Just like your agency is forced to work with the record you had in front of you and the petition that you granted. You don't get to go off record. So why? You still haven't convinced me, obviously. So try again.
I would further note that these cases were even consolidated for argument. Although they started as two IPRs, that, again, they involved the same parties, the same patents, the same primary reference, Michelson. And once the board, the two parties had the full ability to debate Michelson. Once the board entered its findings in Michelson, those findings applied to that patent, and they naturally became an alternative rationale in the 508 IPR as well.
Okay, you lost me for a second procedurally. The two parties had the ability to debate Michelson when?
In the 507 IPR. It's the same parties arguing about the same references as disclosing the limits in the same patent.
But at oral, so forgive me if I'm wrong. My recollection of this factual record is that they asked to file a surreply after suddenly this passage of Michelson was relied on, let's just say only for the 508. Let's keep it on your worst set of facts. But they asked to file a surreply. The request to file a surreply was de facto denied? At the initial point, it's my recollection.
It was denied, Your Honor.
It
yes.
was at my initial point, it wasn't denied, right? At the initial point, they said, we'll make a decision and we'll let you know in oral argument or something weird like that. They gave sort of some very circumspect and weird response.
The board generally asks the parties to ask permission and then addresses the issue as part of the merits in many cases.
And so it wasn't really technically denied, like they didn't have a clear denial at that point. But then they go into oral argument, and even though Medtronic in oral argument had brought up Michelson, column 10, figure 8, when the patent owner sought to stand up in oral argument and respond to it, I believe that he was cut off. I remember the exact transcript by the board judge saying, wait a minute, doesn't that go to what you asked to file your surreply on? Well, let's move on. So how did they have a full and fair opportunity to address the issue at the hearing when it is my recollection, and if my facts are wrong, you will correct me, no doubt, but it is my recollection that they were actually cut off at the oral argument from being able to respond to those points.
The board's rules prohibit presenting new arguments and evidence at the oral hearing. In fact, I believe the board has been reversed by this court in cases where it has entertained.
So how did they have a full and fair opportunity to respond to Michelson figure 18 and whether there were problems with the board's reliance on that for purposes of length and width when they weren't allowed to address it because you were viewing it at that point as a new argument?
Your Honor, their opportunity to respond was in the patent owner response, and they...
How? At the petition stage in 508, there was no mention of Michelson, column 10 or figure 18. So why would they have responded in the patent owner response to something that didn't appear in the petition?
Effectively, Your Honor, I'd agree. If the findings based on Michelson fall in 507. They fall in 508. The board simply
That's not my point, and that's never been my point. So you agreeing with that, it doesn't actually advance our discussion at all. Because as Judge Toronto pointed out earlier, IPR 508 involves two independent or two claims, 16 and 17, which were not otherwise invalidated in 507. So even if 507 stands, we still have to reach whether or not due process was attendant in the 508 analysis, because there are two claims at issue there that weren't at issue in the earlier one. So you saying you agree if Michelson doesn't carry the day in 507, then it doesn't carry it in 508. Michelson wasn't argued the same way in the two cases. So that's not the point.
Your Honor, I'd return to my point that Michelson's ability to disclose all of the structural limitations was only imported as an alternative argument into the 508 okay. IPR. Again, the board began by framing the issue as petitioner is relying on both for the combination. That's at page 5. That's how it frames the issue. It addresses patent owner's argument that you can't combine them. And at pages 10 and 11, it concludes that you can combine them, that Tomei shows that you can make a posterior implant.
Procedurally, what happens in the event that I end up disagreeing with you that due process concerns weren't satisfied here? Is it a reversal? Is it a vacate and remand? What happens? Because Medtronic is gone now. They have settled, and you're sort of standing in their shoes, which you've done a really admirable job of doing, given that that wasn't your brief. And a lot of the questions I asked you today didn't necessarily flow directly from what you had argued in the amicus, but rather were addressing kind of some of Medtronic's arguments. So I recognize all of that, and you've done a very good job in that regard. But what happens if I disagree with you? Do we vacate? Do we reverse? Does it go back, and does the process continue at the PTO?
At the very least, the PTO would urge a remand, for the board. If this board concludes, for example, that Medtronic or NuVasive should have been entitled to the surreply, the board can consider that surreply, consider these arguments that a modular implant is somehow outside the claims.
Would this be the first time that the board has ever considered submissions of evidence on remand from this court in an IPR? Maybe you should do it more often. I'm just asking if it's the first time.
Yeah, I'm really not sure, Your Honor. I mean, certainly cases have been remanded for further consideration by the board. And in this case, we have a relatively complete record. There's only the additional arguments about what figure 18 does or doesn't teach.
And is there a... What can you tell us about... what standard the board would apply in deciding whether it can go ahead on remand without a petitioner there anymore?
That's a novel question that I hesitate to address in the first instance, Your Honor. It's something the office would definitely have to consider. Again, though, the office... I know you've read our brief, but we believe that there was adequate notice from the petition and the institution decision that Michelson could be relied on for all of the structural limitations. We know that
let me just take you down another road before we stop, and that is NuVasive challenges whether PTAB articulated motivation to combine and the substantial evidence provided. Why would a Pazita be motivated to combine the references, and where did the PTAB articulate that reasoning?
I know that at least in the 508 IPR, they did credit, or they did at least offer, explain Medtronic's argument that you would lengthen a long and narrow implant for the purposes of structural stability and simply for purposes of optimization in accordance with the teachings of the prior art. The prior art teaches you all kinds of different shapes and sizes of implants for different purposes. The specification in this patent doesn't even really discuss the limitations. It was just known to size implants in different sizes. And again, for the type of lateral implants that are contemplated here, it was known that you could insert a longer implant and that a longer implant gives you stability. I know that finding is at least discussed in the 508 IPR. I assume that there's a similar discussion in the 507 IPR, although I don't have it in my fingertips. But again, because in 507 you're relying on Michelson for all of the structural limitations, there's no need for a motive to combine what's already within Michelson. Mm-hmm. Now, other references were discussed for some of the add-on references. There are seven principal features of these patents. It all came down to these two structural limits. Those additional references, the anti-migration elements and radiopaque markers, and those things weren't disputed in this case. It all came down to two structural limits, and the board concluded both of those limits are identified in the Michelson patent.
Okay, Mr. Mattel, thank you very much. We went over by 3 minutes, so to even up time, Mr. Rosato, I'll give you 2 minutes of rebuttal time back.
Thank you very much for the additional time, Your Honor. So just to get to Judge Toronto's question, and maybe you were ahead of me on this one, Judge Toronto, but at for the 507 case at A170, I had indicated that that there was a discussion, the following discussion where this block citation to the Michelson column 10 occurs, that there was a lead-in with the element by element and then a follow-on with rationale to combine. I would just point out on page 170, A170 that is, element G, which is the ratio issue, is missing. So they are specifically...
Isn't it between F and J?
Yeah, it says right below. That sentence refers back to Fry, so it is Fry and is the Fry reference on which they're.
And it says alternatively and additionally, as explained below, combination of Fry and Michelson. I took that first sentence just to be. By the way, we're not giving up on the argument we just spent a lot of pages on. But if you don't believe that, now we're going to talk about the combination and. G is in here, and that's why when you get to page 176, they start, or not 176, I'm sorry, 174, they then pick up element E, which is not in the list of A through D, F through J, but that G is included. That was my...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and I think what they're doing is referring back saying, we already told you why Fry meets all these other things, and we're sticking with that, but we're pulling in Michelson for this additional element.
Okay, can I ask this question? I guess it's maybe the same thing or a version of the question having to do with the 508. I know you'd like to win on 507 as well, but the board didn't itself say, we find in STS and Telemann a implant with a length-to-width ratio greater than or equal to 2.5. It said, we find that in Michelson. It describes that in STS, Telemann, and as I look at STS and Telemann, I'm having trouble understanding how it's not plain on the face of it. 8 millimeters to 22 and 10 to 26, and I mean, it's right there. So what's the doubt about that? Maybe they just...
I think the ratio is there, and that is what Medtronic asserted. What they tried to do is point to a different reference of Michelson, and the problem there when it comes to rationale is why you're selectively taking only some dimensions from a Michelson implant and leaving others. And that's the theory that the board rejected, absent a specific rationale.
So it would require it, if you have to find the ratio limitations in Telemann, et cetera, and the length in Michelson, then you have to combine them. If they're all in Michelson, you don't have to.
The
so
question
it's a
is,
different kind of analysis. Is that the
idea? It's a different type of analysis, and it doesn't answer the question of why you start with one type of implant that's designed a particular way and then turn to another implant and take some things but not others. The board, in the context of allowing Claim 18, said you can't do that unless you give us a good rationale to do it, and allowed Claim 18 to survive for that reason. The same assessment applies to the others.
Okay, Mr. Rosato, your time is well up, so that concludes our hearing on